Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. Boys, we got an amazing show this episode. Tell them, Jeremy.
Yeah, we talk about Commando and all sorts of things. We love it.
I know, you're here for the intro for once. I'm very excited. It's for Fansgiving. Shout out Merle Rogers for giving us this big pick. But if I could implore you, listeners, if you're a new listener or if you haven't done this yet, drop us a 5-star rating on the iTunes or the Stitcher. It helps us out tremendously, costs you absolutely nothing, and means the world to us.
It's also my birthday episode.
And it's Jeremy's birthday episode. So without further ado, get strapped in, turn the volume up to 11, and get ready for Commando.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and bitches. Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and bitches.
You know what? But listen, we're here. We're here and we're back. Welcome to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric P. Woodworth. And I'm joined by my co-host, the always magnanimous Jeremy Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing,
sir? Okay.
Who is joining us on the show this evening?
Me, Bill Duke.
Bill Dukes? That's right. Who you went with out of everybody, huh? Yeah, Bill
right.
Dukes.
And you know what I'm doing right now?
What are you doing?
I'm shaving my already shaved skin. Until the razor breaks on my body.
I like that Bill Dukes, his main power is being black and not getting razor bumps. Like, that's his main...
smoothest skin in all of America.
The greatest skin you've ever seen on African-American.
This makes it so bad if a predator shoots me in the head after I've shaved.
Oh, yeah.
But we're not talking about Predator. We're talking about a totally different
movie altogether. Yeah. It's a completely different one.
You know what would be really great? If What's Bill that? Dukes got killed by a Terminator and an alien.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that would be good. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be great. You know what I mean?
I just wish everybody was killed by a Terminator, a Predator, and an alien. Well...
Oh, good times. Well, welcome back, everybody. We got ourselves another Fansgiving episode. This one dedicated to shout outs Merle Rogers, who gave us this movie tonight. Yeah, Merle Rogers, one of our top fans, man. We're really excited.
Is his brother Daryl?
It is a female. I don't know. Have you never met Merle? Have you never met Merle
I don't
Rogers?
Know. If I did,
she's a very nice lady.
I'm sure she's great because she's a fan.
That's why you got to get out into the mix and see the comedy scene every once in a while, Jeremy.
I have no money.
That's not true.
I am a loser.
You go out as Pogo the Clown all the time
and give every last dollar I have to celebrities.
Yeah, you give them to B-rated celebrities so we can get sound bites for the show.
Oh, but there's some big celebrities out there getting free Pogo T-shirts.
Oh yeah, hell yeah, dude.
Hell yeah.
That is tight.
I don't know if the biggest would be the kid from E.T. or Scott Ian from Anthrax.
Oh, by the way, shout outs. The guy from E.T., the kid from E.T., has a pretty major cameo in the new Shining sequel, Dr. Sleep, which is by the way, fucking Dr. Sleep, Jeremy. I took a half day on Friday just so I could go watch it before it left the theaters because it's not getting a good box office turnout. And if you're listening to this podcast, let me tell you, go see Dr. Sleep. If you liked the original Shining, it is a fucking knock out of the park to me. I fucking love Dr. Sleep. It pays homage to the original Stanley Kubrick film in the way it's shot, in the way it's paced, the weird camera angles, all that shit is very much like an homage to the original Kubrick film. And they somehow incorporate like the Stephen King universe. I like to call it the SKU. The SKU is very much.
So Randall Flagg shows up.
Dude, they really do Stephen King service. Like I realize like the book The Shining and the movie by Stanley Kubrick are so vastly different. And then the sequel book is so different from this, but they do service to both, just like kind of how the original did. I fucking love the hell out of it. I really did.
Did the was the original Kiss song in it as well? They call me Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, yes, that's actually the opening. They're like, it's actually just 15 minutes of Kiss concert that it opens up to, which is why I thought it was so strong.
Hey, everybody, watch out for Dr. Sleep. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I really did love the fuck out of Dr. Sleep, though. I sat there, and when I got out, there was... All right, so here's one thing I'm weird about the movie, okay?
Yeah.
I went there, and I guess I went to a matinee showing. It was at 11 o'clock. I guess I didn't read my ticket closely. This was a closed caption viewing of the movie.
Gosh.
So I had to watch it with closed captions on an IMAX screen. And
now, why do they even have that?
I guess for deaf people.
People don't need the closed caption. They get the little electronic sensor that they can put in their sippy cup holder, and then they can watch a background, watch it as it reflects back to where the closed captioning is. Like real theaters used.
I didn't know that, but here's the thing. I went to go see it at 11 a.m. because I took off of work. I took like a half day so I could just go to the movie theaters and watch it. And when I'm sitting there, there's one other guy. And I was like, I'm thinking to myself, should I complain right now? Like, I don't know. So I was like, but maybe this guy is deaf, right? The other guy who's watching it, maybe I'm rude and this is the only chance he has to watch this movie, right? So maybe I'm a dick and I just didn't read my ticket carefully. So when I got out, he was in the bathroom and we were both taking pisses afterwards. And I was just like, hey, how's that movie? He just ignored me. So it was a real deaf guy in the theater with me. So I couldn't ask him to turn off the closed captioning. I just had to ignore it. But a closed caption doesn't really bother me that much for some reason. It doesn't. It didn't take me out of the film itself.
What really is bad is when you make farty noises and he didn't even notice. So.
Yeah, I kept going bleh, like that. I was just like, yo, I could just listen to fucking death metal up here on my phone and it doesn't even matter. He loves
gosh.
It. But every time if he sees the blink of the phone, yo, that takes him out of the fucking thing, you know? Because it's like real life when you see the words underneath people's things. You know, he can't escape reality.
I prefer the children's autistic version of Dr. Sleep with the lights on, and also they cut all of the offensive part out of the movie, so now it's like 10 minutes. So for autistic kids. So.
But overall, Dr. Sleep, much better than It Chapter 2, which is a bit much. If you can finish It Chapter 2, it's a marathon to make it through that movie.
Was a little bit lengthy.
Bill Hader saves It Chapter 2. He's the only redeeming thing out of that film.
I hate to say it, it got a little bit like Silent Hill at one point with the actual scares, which I was actually impressed by.
There are, like, listen, there's moments, but it didn't need to. First of all, I'm already pissed when a movie's over 90 minutes. If it's over 90 minutes, those extra minutes of my life that you're taking better be fucking good. And Dr. Sleep, I did enjoy. It did. It took me into a world that I really enjoyed being in.
Should we give a big-ass spoiler just to say something?
I don't know. I mean, I can always edit it out if it sucks, but I probably won't.
Did it make you sad to see Baby It?
No, I liked Baby It. Baby It was cute. Baby Clit.
Oh, gosh.
Now, Jeremy, as far as entertainment goes, have you watched The Mandalorian yet?
Did I watch it day one? Fuck yes.
God, is it the shit? Is Star Wars back again? Star Wars is good again, right now.
I must say, it really brought back IG-88 to like a new level for me.
Well, that was IG-11 actually. IG-11. Well, it was
I'm just talking about the type of droid he is. Okay?
But I do love an IG-88 droid.
Like 88 is different than 11. So he's a fucking robot.
He makes the Terminator look like a fucking pussy. Put it like that. That it is. He's so badass in it.
It's like the beginning of the episode one. It's like, oh, there's C-3PO. Oh, no, it's a female C-3PO.
Oh,
like, whatever.
It's a bitch 3PO.
And so, well, C-3PO's gone through changes over the years. No, I am not C-3PO. I am now. Okay, you're gone through them changes. So, okay, no. Just remember that the coolest part of Empire Strikes Back was the first time that you saw the other bounty hunters. Although at the same time you're thinking, this is definitely not a robot. This is definitely not a guy in a suit. This is just like a freaking robot just standing there doing nothing.
Yeah.
Like, but when you see him actually in action, man, that was awesome.
Well, honestly, this is the first live action version of what we've seen, but Jeremy, if you've never seen the Clone Wars or the Star Wars like CGI animated series, there are multiple episodes where those killbots come out, and yeah, they like crawl on the walls and like do fucking Spider-Man shit and just like
yeah, I know. He was on a ship and he got woken up or something in the one episode of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
But I think more importantly is the video of IG-88, the dancing robot. Which I think was pretty
good.
How
dare you bring that up on the show? And not
it's IG-88, the dancing robot. Yes.
And hey, shout outs to Brian Posehn, friend of Laugh Finder podcast, and Tommy Simbazo. He was actually in the episode one of The Mandalorian. He's the guy that drives the speeder
and gets
eaten. I love that Brian Posehn just dies in all the things that he's in. I love that to death.
And you know who he is, don't you?
Who's that?
He's the devil.
He's the devil.
And why? Because he was born on June 6th of 1966.
Oh, shit. Yes. 666. The birthday of the beast.
Well, your son has died, but we're going to give you this big lumpy guy instead, known as Brian Posehn, is going to be your child now.
Hey, what's going on? I'm Satan, everyone. It's me. I'm Brian Posehn. I'm We're actually the spawn of Satan. I like to play D&D.
Is there a bigger person that's gonna get away with evil than this big dopey freaking guy? It's like, oh, I am the devil.
Yeah, my handsome father, he gets all the chicks, and I actually just do all the evil for the most part.
Wait a second, you're doing Joe Robinson as the devil.
Best Brian Posehn that I have, okay? I have nothing else in this world but my Brian Posehn.
I'm Brian Posehn.
Hey, it's me, Brian Posehn. I'm also Andy fucking whatever from 2020.
Did he want to be in the Devil's Rejects? He wanted to be a
rodeo clown.
I could have been a rodeo clown.
I do like that his goal was to be a rodeo clown. So that's good. By the way, last shout out for horror shit if you want to watch it. Jeremy, are you caught up with the Creepshow show yet?
No, I couldn't even find it.
Dude, the Creepshow show is a 10 out of 10. It episode 1, can I tell you who's in episode 1?
I looked it up, couldn't find it.
Creepshow episode 1 has Adrian Barbeau. It has Tobin Bell, and it has what's his name, Gus from Breaking Bad, are all in episode one of Creepshow.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yes, Esposito. They're all in episode one.
And I did watch him in Taps this week, though.
And Jeremy, my favorite of all of the shorts that they've done. Well, I'd say it's either like number one or 1A, 1B. Is there's a story about werewolves in Nazi Germany, and Jeremy, the lead Nazi, is none other than Jeffrey Combs.
Yes.
Fucking
as
friend
a German,
of the show,
right?
Lead, as like the main German commander who's trying to find out who has murdered my son, and his German accent not up to par in any way, shape, or form. But I appreciate that it's Jeffrey Combs the whole time.
Ernest Tolt, you killed him. No, I didn't. I gave him life.
No, but it is a very fucking cool ass show.
I think he did a good Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
That was one of the masters of horror. So
I do. Listen, I loved him in Castle Freak. That's where. Yeah. That's the Jeffrey Combs that I know. When he's looking at a monster with its peen out that's trying to kill him. That's the Jeffrey Combs I want to remember.
I rag him on Death Falls, which was literally a $1 movie that I bought. And I thought it was like before Reanimator. Turns out it was almost like 10 years after Reanimator, but it was so badly done. I think it was probably shot in almost 8mm. It was that bad of quality.
Okay.
And almost like a TV movie, of a bad TV quality movie. And he hated it. He's like, oh gosh, why'd you have to fucking mention that film?
What the fuck is wrong with you?
And I'm like, no, you did a good job as your character, because it was so different than Herbert West and your other characters, which were kind of nerdy. You were actually kind of like a badass. And I'm like, and he's like, well, at least I got to work with the old guy from fucking Home Alone.
Hey, that are you talking about the guy with
the
shovel?
Christine, the old man who sells Christine.
Hey, you know who that guy's related to, don't you?
No. Oh shoot, you told me and I forgot.
It's your boy. That guy's the grandfather of comedian Jesse Kendall.
Oh gosh, I can't believe I forgot that.
That's his grandfather. It's really awesome. Shout out to Jesse Kendall.
He's dead now. Isn't
super
he?
Fucking dead. No, I loved. By the way, Jesse, I didn't really mean that. I hope you took that as a joke.
Jesse,
on our podcast,
we love you so much. You should have been like the next John Belushi by now.
I think he is going to be the next John Belushi. I believe that Jesse Kendall will be immensely famous.
I think
and
John
by the
Belushi,
way,
but bigger than Eddie Murphy.
Hey, can I give a big shout out? If you go on my Facebook page and you look through the feed, I shared a movie that Jesse Kendall has on a GoFundMe. He has made a faux Hallmark style movie about a man and a woman and dogs that looks fucking hilarious. If you can find it in your heart to spare $5 to fund something, fund this Jesse Kendall project. It is fucking important, and he needs it. Like you,
if I can make,
he's
a
really
new...
really good. And another guy, a friend of Baltimore comedy scene that moved to Chicago, Mr. Matt Mahaffey, is also involved in it. Who is super fucking? By the way, one of the most handsome men you'll ever see. From what I've heard, huge dick. Huge, like, fucking has a 9-inch peen soft, okay?
Wow.
Soft 9-inch peen. He is doing the camera work and doing some amazing work. Also a very funny gentleman in general. So check out Jesse Kendall. Fund his goddamn project. Don't talk to me about anything else.
I would have to say my Coco Lane Mount Rushmore is Jesse Kendall.
Coco Lane, which is the open mic that died because a flood washed it away and it no longer exists, and I used to run. Okay.
And
your Mount Rushmore of Coco Lane. Can I guess what it is before you say?
Of them.
I know you're going to say Jesse Kendall.
Yes.
I know you're going to say Grant Lindahl.
Yes.
I know you're probably going to say Chris Restivo.
No.
And then your fourth and final, maybe Rob Mayer.
No, Rob Mayer has already made his own name. He was almost established before us, but I would say you made me free. Michael Friedman.
Michael Friedman is a good call. Yeah. Michael Friedman. But yeah, that's only three.
I wouldn't pin down a fourth. I'd say me as the fourth.
You would. How humble of you.
It's the only time I actually did anything in comedy. So.
Well, listen, I love all that shit. Jeremy, before we get into tonight's topic, we got two things. We got some Joe Robinson corrections, but also I have a quick story to share with you. I probably have shared this on the Laugh Finder premium content, so guess what? You're getting an inside glimpse.
So now you can just turn this part off.
Yeah, unsubscribe to my other podcasts that I get money for. But this story is too good not to share.
Oh, gosh.
Jeremy, a couple of weeks ago, I did a show for a gentleman at the Beer Baron Comedy Loft. It's in D.C., okay? Now, the premise of this show is that it's called Under the Influence. It's where you're supposed to go up and talk about drug use stories and then make funny bits out of it, which, so it's me, Tommy Simbazo, my other compatriot, Brian Preston, from the Laugh Finder podcast, and this female comedian who's very, very funny, Megan Grimes. Maybe we'll have her as a future guest on the show, most likely. But we're at the show about 10 minutes before showtime. This gentleman walks in with two children under the age of 10, okay?
under 10 years old. The promoter comes up and he goes, "Oh, listen, sir, this is actually an adult show. You really, I would suggest that you don't bring the kids to this. It's going to be some really graphic content that we're going to be talking about." And this guy goes, "I think I know what my children can hear immediately." I assume this guy was a Christian. Let me do this. But
Hindu.
He was a Hindu. He was Indian, right? I know what my children can hear. They're very adult, and I'm not scared to shield them from the world. And I'm like,
Okay. Take them to see Human Centipede, you dumbass. Yeah.
So this the lady who is waiting tables there, older lady, comes over and she goes, "Oh no, these babies cannot be in here. Listen, sir, you cannot have these children in here. This is ridiculous. You got to go. Babies, you come with me." Grabs this guy's children by the wrists and then pulls them out of the show.
Yes.
And he's like, excuse me, man, you're touching my children, right? Like,
yes.
So now I'm out at the bar outside of the room where we're doing this comedy show, and I can hear the commotion that's going. He's like, "First of all, you were very rude to me. I was in here. I am a paying customer. I paid for me and my children to come into this show." And like this. And so there's a bit of a commercial motion. He's like, "I need to speak to your manager immediately." So the manager comes out and he's like, "Listen, I know what the show was. I brought my children here to see it. I need them." He's like, "This is ridiculous." He's causing a stink. But in the back of my mind, I'm ecstatic that this lady had the gall to go kick this guy out of the show. Because listen, this is the thing. Even if you're comfortable with bringing children into a show, the rest of the room is uncomfortable with what you're doing right now. Like, we are uncomfortable to laugh at things because we're trying to be good people. But that's not what we're here to do, right?
I know. I've seen parents take their kids to see 50 Shades of Grey. And yeah. I'm just like, you're just a horrible parent, you know?
So we start the show.
By the way, watching some of Good Boys last night was pretty freaking awesome.
Good Boys is a good-ass movie. By the way,
watching porn?
By the way, speaking of the movie Good Boys, Jeremy, you know the main character in Good Boys, like the main little kid?
Yeah.
He shows up in Dr. Sleep and... all right, he gets brutally fucking murdered. Wow. And I'm like, it's like hard to watch how that kid gets murdered in the movie.
Did you actually watch Good Boys?
Yeah, I watched Good Boys. It was good.
Did you know who the black actor was of the parents of the black kid?
No, I don't remember.
The only reason I mentioned him, because he looks like an exact black copy of Seth Rogen.
Oh, okay. I'll have to go back in the time capsule.
It's literally,
to see
if
that.
Seth Rogen was black, that's exactly what he looks like.
Okay. Listen.
Beard and everything. Oh, gosh. Right.
So, Jeremy, let me take you back to the Beer Baron. The show starts now. The guy's kicked out. Megan Graves gets on stage, and she starts telling her drug stories on stage.
Please tell me it involves some sort of fisting and a dildo.
The guy complained to management so much after her set started, he gets ushered back in the room with both of his children. Okay? So now he's sitting at the back of the room near the comic table, about 10 feet away, about the distance I am from you right now, Jeremy.
Yeah.
So they sit down, they get settled, and it gets to this part in Megan Graves' joke where she just goes, "So we were both drunk, me and this girl, and we both started sucking this guy's dick." And I start uncontrollably laughing, right? like that's all. I look at this guy's face like, right? So she does a very sexually explicit set, not knowing that there's children even in the room. But by the way, no, don't change your set at all, right? Like, do your fucking shit, right? So I'm watching it, and I can see in the guy's face that he's uncomfortable, right?
Good.
He's uncomfortable, but at the same time, he's made such a stink about it that he can't back
ride
down right
out.
Now. Now he has
ride
to
ride it out.
He's
smart
made
ass.
A decision, and he has to do it, right? So I get up, Jeremy. I get up and I open my set like this and I go, I was like, "Listen, hey, children in the back, I know this is a show about drugs and there's a lot of things that you're hearing out here. And what I want to tell you, and if there's one thing you take away from this show, it's this: do all the drugs all the time. I know that your dad is going to tell you don't do drugs. Okay. I know that. But But drugs are actually super fucking cool. And when your dad asks you why you do drugs when you're a little bit older, I want you to tell him it's because you took me to this show tonight, Dad. So I can see in his eyes, this guy's fucking pissed at me, right? He's not fucking happy with me, right? So I do my whole bit. By the way, it involves cocaine use, sexually explicit themes. It is a fucking NC-17 rated bit that I do up here. The crowd's loving it. They have a good time. Well, Jeremy, there's another ace in the hole, and that's Mr. Tommy Cimbazzo. Tommy Cimbazzo, friend of the show, laugh finder compatriot, and generally one of my best friends in the whole world, gets up there. He starts laying out his stories, which are psychedelic uses and stuff like that, but he goes on a tangent.
Does he tell his Star Trek movie?
Yeah, he tells the Star Trek movie bit, which is great, right? That's a good joke. But more importantly, he starts talking to the kids and telling them how to get legal synthetic marijuana from a gas station. So he's telling them how to get legal drugs and how to huff things at their house, just giving them the playbook on how to do drugs in front of their dad. But the thing that fucking crushed me, that made me laugh so hard, Jeremy, this is so Tommy did this thing where he's like, hey, make some noise if you've done like hypnotic mushrooms, and like a couple people clap. He's like, oh shit, okay, hey, clap if you haven't done mushrooms. And then like the dad goes, okay, children, make sure you clap here. I'm like, like coercing his children on. Like, don't embarrass daddy in this situation.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I couldn't fucking stop laughing at this guy, dude. And it was really fun. Like, I kept looking at him like, the kids didn't want to be there. They were upset that they know how awkward it is that they're there. But the dad had already sold himself on this thing. He's like, pride is not going to allow me to leave here. I fought to be in this situation. I can't leave. But I will tell you, the second Tommy got off stage, and he fucking crushed it, but the second he got off stage, they were fucking gone. They were out of there so fucking fast. He stayed on principle alone, which was, it was pretty awesome. I really did, and like, I did, really did like that part of it. So yeah, we ruined some kids' lives, and they're gonna do drugs. We do have.
We also had a little teaching session on making C4 at the end of the show.
Yeah. Then we showed him how to do improvised bomb making. So here's a couple of Joe Robinson's corrections.
Hey, Joe Robinson, do you have any corrections for us this week on Quality Time?
Okay. I think it's best that I start this with. So we collect Joe Robinson's corrections, but on the Rob and Joe show, he decided to bring up the things that even when he sends corrections that I mess up. So I'm going to play a little bit of audio from the Rob and Joe show. Shout outs. Go check them out. Very, very funny show where they mentioned Quality Time. And so, Joe, you can hear it in his own words how frustrated he gets with our very show.
But speaking of Eric Woodworth, I don't know if you call it a segment, but I listen to their podcast, Shout Out Quality Time, which I really like it. They break down usually a B movie or a horror movie.
Yeah, like a Roadhouse kind of a movie.
Yeah, and I really enjoy
classic.
I really enjoy it. But I always type the corrections that things they got wrong, and I send it to them. And Eric,
like Charles de Gaulle Airport.
And Eric always says dilapidated instead of dilapidated, right? He says dilapidated. So I send him a correction saying, no, it's dilapidated, not dilapidated. When he reads my correction, he reads it the other way around. And it makes me fucking crazy. He's like,
on purpose?
Joe said, it's dilapidated, not dilapidated. I'm like, no, because then people. Okay, so the guy that was on the show is a friend of ours, Sean Jokes, right?
Yes.
And he goes, as soon as I said it, as soon as Eric said the correction, he goes, but then they went on.
Right.
And then he said it again later, and it makes me fucking crazy. Like, you're making me look like, and by the way, they record like 3 weeks in advance, so everybody who's hearing that is going, well, that's not right.
Yeah.
Joe's an idiot. Meanwhile, Eric's the idiot. Two times in a row, he's made the same fucking mistake.
Are you sure he's not messing with you?
No, I don't think that he is. But maybe.
Because it's funnier with you. Now that's going to be his thing. He's going to give you the corrections is wrong.
Yes, that's right. You said Bruce Jenner won a gold medal. No, he didn't. Anyway.
He won a silver.
But
it's on the cover of Cornflakes, not Wheaties.
From now on, Joe, you should go on and read your own corrections.
Yes, thank you, Robbie.
Or just, well, he's not going to. He's going to go over there. He's going to drive.
Yes, yes. Drive an hour.
It takes an hour to get there. I'm definitely not going
to just
drive.
Record it there at the studio and then send it.
Just
oh, here's the
just
other thing he
corrections.
Does, which makes me crazy. Okay, So let's say they do a movie. Let's say it's The Evil Dead 2. Okay, Well they do it in two. They do an hour and then another hour.
Two episodes.
But they don't record it a week apart. They record it the same day,
right.
And then they just play it two separate weeks. They get every other week off that way, right? That's how they do it. But then they shit on me for not having any corrections. Meanwhile, they've read all my corrections in the previous episode, and then they record the same day and then say Joe didn't have any corrections. And now they have a song about when I don't have corrections.
You're an integral part of the show.
I'm the most important
integral.
Part of the show. I'm the most important part.
You are.
So that is Joe Robinson's personal corrections for the show right there. Pretty good,
this,
huh?
This is how we're hurting Joe's career because of his corrections on our show.
Yeah. We've damaged him some way.
Tens of people that listen to us, so...
So here are some of the Joe Robinson corrections that he's sent up. He goes, he mentions the dilapidated and dilapidated. You, of course, reverse it. Making it look like I don't know what I'm talking about. Now you have to correct the correction. So, Joe, I'm going to be
this
honest with you.
Corrections of Joe's Eric's corrections.
He goes, by the way, guys, Jeremy, by the way, you guys laughed at Jeremy for Cuba Gooding Jr. in Coming to America. He was in Coming to America, and I laughed at you for
you
that,
thought
Jeremy.
I was kidding.
Thought you were joking. Thought it was a bit.
I don't even know if he said anything, but he was sitting in the barber chair.
Yeah.
He was probably like only 18 or 16 back then. Actually, he was the Jew.
Here's
the Jew in the barber.
He sent me this on November 7th, which I think is in relation to our Twilight episode. He goes, the song Belly called Feed the Tree says, take off your hat, boy, when you're talking to me, not keep your head up, boy, when you're talking to me.
Oh,
you fucking idiot, Jeremy.
Great.
And
just know your belly lyrics.
And we did have a talk about Robert Zemeckis. Zemeckis was not the director of The Frighteners, but he was the producer of it. So there you go.
So it had the Zemeckis feel.
Yep.
By the way, I prefer the lyrics. Take your head off, boy, when you're talking to me.
Take your head off, boy, when you're decapitated. Boom, 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 boom.
We just killed our girlfriends. Yeah.
So... Jeremy mentions Jehovah's Witnesses give out Watchtower, not Lighthouse. But then you caught it later on. And then you go, the Lord Baltimore, where Chiller was, is where I had my only threesome. And that's what Joe Robinson is. He had a threesome at the Lord Baltimore, where Chiller was.
And by the way, that's where Weird Oddities was, not Chiller. Because Chiller is always up in New Jersey, Parsippany.
So I asked Persnippity. Him. I asked him, can I mention this on the show? He's like, yeah, it's fine. It was before I was with Katie, so no problem.
So
and
how
goes,
many dudes was he with?
Well, he said.
Did he play the William Tell overture just like in A Clockwork Orange when it was really fast motion?
So. He also said we never said Robert Pattinson's name correctly. We said it Robert Patterson the entire
the
Twilight
from,
episode.
Guy from Faith No More.
Yes. That's it. And then he shits on my fantasy team. And that's it for Joe Robinson's corrections this week. Pretty amazing stuff,
still
guys.
Held Joe after all these years, even though we're idiots.
I agree. So are we ready to get into tonight's topic, Jeremy?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Do I still mention my birthday tomorrow?
Yeah. Shout out to Jeremy's birthday is tomorrow.
Well, 48.
By the time that you are hearing this, though, it will have already passed. Wish Jeremy a happy birthday. Venmo him cash. That's the best way to make it a happy birthday for him.
My real kick-ass job where I work my ass off. and kind of slow because I only go so fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the, some of the guys that look at me with, what's the weird word? Concern.
Concern.
They say, how are you doing?
It's a powerful phrase.
And the most honestly I can say, I'm still alive.
I'm still here. I'm still alive.
Much like Papillon out on a raft. So.
Still here, motherfuckers.
So, Jeremy, you made a song for tonight's broadcast. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
About tonight's movie? But it has nothing to do with the movie that we're talking about.
Yeah, well, I didn't watch the movie and I know nothing about it, I figure I'll just write a song about the name Commando.
Okay, so here is Jeremy's song about Commando. Shout outs Merle Rogers, who picked this movie for us for Fansgiving. Here's Jeremy's song.
There's a blowing wind all through the night. Going commando! Going commando!
Like not wearing underwear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost like a kill. I should see the spot. Can't for how I might have to ride a bike. Kill you, Louis. Get that mirror away from me. You might see something that you don't want to see. Going commando!
I think I need to call up Ted Nugent about this song. It's gonna be his next new hit.
No, I'm not a Scott. Sometimes I'll be free. When it comes down to them, there's nothing left that's clean. So I go commando. Might see spots on my pants. Cause it's gonna get wet there. There's nothing to keep it from dryness. Yeah. Going commando. Going commando. Commando, yeah.
And that's the end of the song.
The extra, listen, the quacks at the end is what made that song, Jeremy.
That's the end of the song there.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Commando, great Arnold Schwarzenegger film. Probably the most actiony of all action films that have ever actioned. Kill count in this movie, 106 people, 103 of them killed by none other than Arnold Schwarzenegger himself in this film. 103 people he murders.
The only thing that could have made it a little better is some more action lines when he kills people. So.
Yes, yes. And there are so many one-liners. It is a tribute to the 80s. This is one of the most 80s action movies you can ever watch. Is it this or Cobra? What's more 80s to you?
I say it's my favorite sequel to the Tortellis.
To the Tortelli.
Yes.
Okay. Here's a fun fact about the film,
fun
Jeremy.
Fun fact about
Commando. So, by the time we get to the end of this, they set it up that there could be a possible sequel. Now, there never was a Commando sequel, although one was written, and the script that was written for Commando 2 was basically, here was the plot for it, Jeremy. He was supposed to work at a building where he had to hire his own group of mercenaries to protect the building and the computer servers, and then those guys turn on Arnold.
Oh,
and
damn
then
it.
And then take over the building and then do all this shit and basically mercenaries that are there to steal all the information inside of the building.
And was turned into Die Hard.
That's exactly correct. You're 100% correct.
Gruber.
Yes.
I can almost see, you know, Schwarzenegger holding onto Gruber as he falls off the building. So.
And Jenny, the girl who plays Alyssa Milano, who's his daughter, was going to be a lawyer in this film. Instead, it was replaced with, obviously, Bruce Willis and then his wife in the film instead of Jenny and her. And that we got, instead of Commando 2, we got Die Hard from this
and
movie.
And also, the other offshoot was called Enter the Matrix.
Enter the Matrix.
Yes.
Also, he is the father of the movie The Matrix.
Yes,
is that what you're
exactly.
getting at? Okay.
What is The Matrix?
So the movie itself opens up with a grisly hit as a guy comes out to catch the trash guys before they leave his house.
If only one was Tom Savini.
And the trash
reload,
guys...
Reload. I think we missed him.
Yeah. So the trash guys go and blow him away. And right there we see Bill Dukes, who is of Predator fame, and I don't know any other movies that he's in.
This movie has so many, what's the word, sixth degree of Paxton in it. Not to, yeah. Oh, I just fucked the whole thing up. Just edit it out.
Okay.
Just
okay.
Edit it out. It has the sixth degree of Schwarzenegger in this, because not only has what's his name from Predator, Bill Dukes, but also James Horner does the music, who also did Aliens.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
So,
which, by the way, the score for this movie, not great. Not a great score.
But I still love James Horner. He's still one of my top 10 musical guys.
Influences.
Just for Aliens alone.
Okay, fair enough. So he then basically, Bill Dukes goes out and kills another guy at a car lot by running him over with a car that he's test driving. And then another fella goes out on a boat and he blows the boat up. So he's fucking committing acts of homicide left and right. Now, next, we meet John Matrix and Jenny, who John Matrix is Arnold Schwarzenegger. Jenny is Alyssa Milano. He lives out on a mountaintop, secluded from the world.
My favorite is the montage together of father and daughter, like when they go to the cockfights together. And
yes.
And also they're beating up street bums.
He's like, come on, Jenny. These are the poor people in our neighborhood. They need to understand that they need to pull themselves out by the bootstraps. And until they do that, they have to feel the fucking punishment.
They go to a water.
Come on!
They go to a water supply and they're putting in packets of the plague.
Classic father-daughter day. Yeah. So, Arnold, by the way, is doing just regular man stuff, which is just carrying around giant logs on a mountain. like he's just doing farmer's carries with logs that are like 12 times the size of him.
He's doing it, he's also coming.
Yes, I'm coming.
I'm coming.
Now. Come on. Let's get serious here. Don't bullshit me. Come on. So all of a sudden, a bunch of military choppers land on his secluded mountain estate, and it's General Kirby. And Kirby tells John about the current situation.
Someone's killing your men.
You gave them new identities.
There must have been a leak. Lawson, Forrestal, Bennett have all been hit.
Who is doing it?
You've made enemies all over the world, John. It could have been the Syrians, the South Americans, the Russians, or a terrorist group.
George Soros.
They're going to find you.
You are going to make a normal life here.
You will, I promise. I'm going into the city to coordinate with the federal people. We'll nail those bastards before they get close to you. In the meantime, Jackson and Harris will stay here with you.
Are they any good?
Real good. But not as good as you were.
They might make it at least 3 seconds more into this film.
Speaking of lasting 3 seconds, the chopper takes off with General Kirby and immediately gunfire erupts. The guards that they left behind immediately take it out. They're useless. They just immediately get shot. He heads to the tool shed, tells Jenny to hide, to go get his tools, which is basically just an arsenal of weapon akin to the movie The Matrix, where they say, give me weapons, and he just has them all in his thing.
I think I would have preferred in casting that they had the two loser guys from Groundhog's Day as the guys to protect them.
Like, yeah.
Hey, how you doing? We have to protect you.
Yeah, no. Hey, do you think they still got flapjacks?
we're special forces.
So, He goes back after that and gets back to the house and find that Jenny has already been kidnapped and one thug remains behind to talk to John.
Your daughter's safe, Colonel. Whether she stays that way is up to you. My people got some business with you. And if you want your kid back, then you gotta cooperate. Right?
Wrong.
Oh, he just shoots the guy in the head. Alrighty.
And of course, what is that reuse from?
What?
Wrong.
Yes.
From the Terminator. That's right. Yes, yeah. Correct.
Hey, buddy, you can't do that. Wrong.
Wrong. Come on. Get serious here again.
Yeah, I think they gave gave him a bigger line, but he's like, all I can say is wrong in English.
Wrong. Wrong.
The director had a list of words that Schwarzenegger could actually pronounce. So. Okay, we're going to have you say, consider it a divorce. Consider divorce.
Consider a divorce. Come on. So Arnold then runs to his truck to see that it's been disabled. So he
my distributor car.
Come on, who takes this off? You can't even run a car like this. I should have bought a German car. They never would be able to do this. So he takes his Bronco and then starts pushing it down the mountain and then hops in with no brakes or anything. The bad guys narrowly avoid getting smashed by the Bronco, which what's kind of your daughter's in this car. Are you just going to fucking cause a horrible car accident with your daughter in the car? I don't understand his planning, but the car ultimately he escapes from it. It explodes and he's quickly overwhelmed by the manpower on the scene where he gets to see his old friend Bennett.
Bennett, I thought you were
dead. You thought wrong. Ever since you had me thrown out of your unit, I've waited to pay you back.
Do you know what today is, Matrix?
Payday.
They hit him with a goddamn trank dart and knock his ass out.
There's nothing like just mixed audio from a live set versus the studio where it's so obvious that the sound is like, yeah, when you threw me out of me. You remember the other? I was like, what? What? There's the continuity of sound.
What the fuck happened right there? I don't even know what the fuck are you doing?
Which the worst of all has to be the Toxic Avenger where it not only switches from studio to live, but also different voice for the actor itself. It's like, oh, I don't know what's wrong. Sometimes I tear people apart. It's like, just throw any continuity to the wind. I love it.
So that voice you heard of Bennett is played by Vernon Wells. Jeremy, what other Vernon Wells movie have we done on this podcast?
Well, you know Vernon Troyer, of course, the little midget guy.
Not the midget.
He's probably never been in another movie. Not that I can think of. Not the movie that anybody's seen.
Well, no, obviously.
So. Obviously plays, Weird Science.
Yes, he's from Weird Science as one of the bikers. But more importantly, he's from our Road Warrior episode. He plays Wes from the Road Warrior.
Which is my favorite gay biker.
Which is pretty funny because, like, in the Road Warrior, Vernon Wells is kind of jacked and looks great. Commando, he's looking a little fat. He's looking like he's been living off that Mad Max money for a couple of years. Hell yeah. And he's just, I like that he's a fat badass in this. Like, I don't know what about it, but there's something.
Still wearing the meshy Australian shirt that nobody but Australians wear.
Yes. Well, I was reading through some of the background of this, and in my research for the episode, they said that they had another actor hired to play Bennett, but he was a smaller guy and then backed out at the last second, so they used this guy who they actually wanted to use, but they couldn't change the wardrobe. It was already there, so he just had to wear this smaller guy's wardrobe, so he looks like an extra fat ass in the movie because he's just wearing some other guy's clothes throughout the whole thing. I like it. And apparently Vernon Wells and Arnold Schwarzenegger became great friends and are like, it's like one of Arnold's best friends is Vernon Wells.
I really wish Vernon Wells was in Predator.
Yeah, he deserved to be in Predator. Like, who would you kick out of the team?
Like all of the 3-4 skinny guys. Any of those could have gone.
Tell me which guy you kick out.
I don't know their names. I mean, maybe the guy that directed that other movie was one of them.
Shane Black. You take Shane Black out, the guy who makes all the pussy jokes?
Yes. So.
I think that's fair. I don't take out Billy. Billy stays in. But I take out...
You can't make them all wrestlers, but at the same time, Brandon Wells practically is a wrestler.
And I personally don't want to take out the other guy who's like their tracker. He's like, come on, we gotta do it. You know, the guy who only talks through his bottom teeth. I forget what his name is, but that guy, I don't take that guy out either.
Right.
But I could take Shane Black out, he could be replaced by Wes.
He's one of the normal guys.
I definitely don't take out Jesse the Body Ventura. Like, he deserves, and Bill Dukes doesn't go, but.
Damn right.
So anyway, they dart him and knock him out and take him back to Arius's place, who's played by Dan Hiata. What's your favorite Dan Hiata movie?
This is probably his only movie that I can think of. Oh, no. I mean, the first, Coen Brothers film, Blood Simple. That was a good part for him.
Dude, he's really good in the first Addams Family movie back in the 90s. He plays the bad guy in the Addams Family movie as
No, he will always be Mr. Tortelli from Cheers for me. So.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I hate to say I did watch a couple of the Tortellis off show. Gosh, Mrs. Kasem, what a blonde bimbo bitch she was.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Casey Kasem.
So he proposes to John Matrix that he wants him to kill the president of some weird dictator country.
We're going to give you a mission that if you don't obey, you're going to have to rape the president.
Yes, he wants him to kill the president of Valverde. Now, Arius, Dan Hiata, is said to be a disposed dictator from the country Valverde. Now, Valverde was a fictional South American country used by Hollywood in the 1980s and 1990s to depict Spanish-speaking country similar to Cuba or Nicaragua without encountering diplomatic problems. Now, other movies that Valverde was referenced in, it's referenced in the movie Predator, 1987, right? Which also Bill Dukes from this movie is in, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Die Hard 2 in 1990, and the made-for-TV movie Super Carrier, Deadly Enemies. It was a pilot from 1988. So those are all the times you can hear about Valverde, this fictional country in South America. Fun fact, huh?
Fun fact.
Okay, cool. Tight. Now, the goons, they've threatened that if he doesn't want to kill this president of Valverde, they're going to kill his daughter. So the goons drop him off at an airport and get ready to send him on his way. But
also,
as they drop him off...
you're going to have to make a video of you having sex with a pig.
Yes.
What?
So they drop him off and Bennett and Arnold have a little back and forth.
They offered me $100,000. You want to know something? When I found out I'd get my hands on you, I said I'd do it for nothing.
Hey, hold it. I'll be back, Bennett.
I'll be back, Bennett. Come on. Don't bullshit me.
I'm wondering how many movies this was from the Terminator. It was like probably this and then Conan and then this.
Yeah. I guess so.
But he didn't even... He didn't say I'll be back in Conan.
I don't think he does. I think it's the Terminator and now Commando. This is the path of I'll be back. I'll be back, Bennett. Come on. Don't bullshit me.
Anyway, I had to think about Conan. I thought I'd know it inside and out. I don't think he says I'll be back.
So two other thugs, Sully and a African-American gentleman, walk him to the plane. And Sully does not get on the plane with him. Instead, the other guy does. But before he gets onto the plane, Sully wishes him off.
Take care. Oh, here. Have some beers in Valverde Matrix. It'll give everyone a little more time with your daughter.
You're a funny guy, Sully. I like you. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
Move.
This guy had been in like three of the greatest 80s films. Not of the 80s, but three great films between The Warriors. Well, maybe The Warriors was in the 70s.
Okay.
I don't know. It was like 1980 or something.
What's it like when somebody tells you they're going to kill you last? That's the most important part.
Well, as long as somebody else kills him before, I mean, it kind of gives you confidence. But between
I'll show you. I'll let the cancer do it.
Oh, that's four great films, because not only is he's in this, he's in The Warriors. He's in Dreamscape, where he fights Dennis Quaid,
okay.
But also 48 Hours. So that's four big fucking films for the 80s. I don't know why his career didn't continue after that.
I'm glad that you brought up 48 Hours, and we're not at that point yet, but the mansion where the big shootout is in 48 or in this movie, it's the exact same mansion that's from 48 Hours as well. Or no, I'm sorry, it's Beverly Hills Cop. Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, I know those white railings anywhere. So.
It's
practically the same film because it has Eddie Murphy in it. One's a cop and one's out of prison.
So
just see that movie with that black guy.
Jeremy outwoke me on this show. Jeremy outwoke me. Damn it. I failed you as a podcaster. I failed everyone as a podcaster.
I'm pretty sure that's what's his name from the Fifth Element.
So,
oh gosh!
So he gets on the plane, and as soon as he gets on the plane, he snaps the other guy's neck. Who's the body guy, the thug that's flying with him? He snaps his neck and then puts a blanket and a pillow over him. He's like, and then tells the stewardess this.
Excuse me, how long is the flight?
We land in Valverde in exactly 11 hours.
Thank you. And do me a favor. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired.
He's dead tired. Do you get it, Jeremy? Oh, God. Because he is dead. So he immediately sets a timer for the same timeline as like when the flight lands, because that's when the body is going to be discovered. That's how long he has to find his daughter. Now, he's somehow able to slip out of the back of the plane and jump on into a swamp as the fucking plane takes off, as if there's not sensors that sense pressure in the cabin that is being disturbed. No, he just is able to slip out of the back.
I'm sorry to say that he practically is a Terminator in this film. So he does Terminator things still.
So she's meanwhile back. He makes his way back to the airport. Sully is hitting on a stewardess who we'll find out is named Cindy, who's played by Ray Dong Chong. What's your favorite Ray Dong Chong movie, Jeremy?
Oh, that's of course The Color Purple.
Yeah, it's a good movie, good film. I love The Color Purple.
If I haven't watched The Color Purple 100 times every year, so I can see Oprah peeing.
I mean, how else do you jay off? It's only to The Color Purple. That's the only movie.
That in oh gosh, the one where she plays the cave woman, Quest for Fire. Yes,
there you go.
And
there you go.
Gets raped multiple times. So
Sully is hitting on her, and she's clearly not into him.
Oh, wait a second. To be real, Tales from the Dark Side, where she's a gargoyle.
There you go. And Sully follows her out to the car, and John follows behind, and he makes one last shot at sweet, sweet Cindy.
You know, I got something I'd really like to give you.
I'm not interested.
Typical Chris Restivo pickup line.
From here, it looks like a nightmare. Would you please leave me alone?
You fucking whore.
You fucking whore.
That's how all my dates go. So
Sully goes off and hops in his yellow Porsche, and John then comes up and basically kidnaps Cindy, rips out the passenger side seat of her car so that he looks like a regular sized gentleman sitting on the floor, which is just hilarious. You can just rip this out.
How many Terminator things does he do in this movie?
It's
ripping
so
a chair literally out of a car.
So Cindy is already having some good chemistry with John.
It could be realistic if it was a Hyundai, but not a good MG.
No, not that. So they're driving around, and you can already sense the good chemistry between the two of them.
Can you tell me what this is all about?
Yeah, a guy I trusted for years wants me dead.
It's understandable. I've only known you for 5 minutes, and I want you dead, too.
She tells us,
do we need another take? A guy who I've trusted for years, he is trying to kill me now.
You know what, Arnold, that's the best we're gonna get out of you. That's great. Let's roll with
okay it. After the 50th take, a guy I trusted for years is trying to kill me.
I mean, he's basically like Arnold Schwarzenegger is basically what's his name, what's the guy's name from The Room?
Yeah.
He's basically
Tom Wilson.
Yeah. He's basically the guy from The Room, but with muscles. You understand? Like, that could be his life. He's like, come on, don't do this. This is bullshit.
I did not hurt her.
Oh, hi, Mark. Like, he's basically that guy. He's basically
although I think
that
he would
guy.
Have been a better Joker than John Leto. So.
Jared Leto. I got you.
Leto. Right. He'll always be Leto to me. So. Steven Biko.
They follow Sully to the mall, and Arnold convinces Cindy to go in and seduce him. Now, this mall that they're in, Jeremy, do you know what other Arnold Schwarzenegger film?
Maybe Terminator 2?
Yes, it's the exact same mall that
Only
Terminator 2 is.
Only because I read it in the trivia!
Yeah! Get your dicks on!
I wish I could go to that mall, if it still had the same arcade from Terminator 2.
God, that would be so badass. The Galleria?
You see that same mullet kid playing video games in there from Awful Waffle Time.
But instead of seducing Sully, she goes and alerts the mall cops, and the mall cops immediately call in some backup.
Attention all units. Emergency on the theater level. Suspect, 6'2", brown hair. He's one gigantic
director's brother.
Motherfucker.
I really like it. He's one gigantic motherfucker. He starts beating up the cops left and right. Sully sees him and then runs for a payphone. John picks it up and gorilla presses the phone booth and breaks it. John then avoids multiple gunshots, rappels down to from the third floor on top of the elevator, but the mall cops slow him down as Sully is allowed to escape. He then chases him as Sully takes off in his Porsche. Cindy hops in her car as John's trying to pull off and has a little bit of words for Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You steal my car, you rip the seat out, you kidnap me, you ask me to help you find your daughter, which I very kindly do, and then you get me involved in a shit out where people are dying and there's blood spurting all over the place, and then I watch you rip a phone booth out of the wall, swing from the ceiling like Tarzan, and then there's a cop that's gonna shoot you and I save you and he starts chasing me. Are you gonna tell me what's going on or what?
No.
This is not ironic, don't you think?
I'm not gonna tell you. Come on.
You're freaking out as if there's a giant elephant put you in Nevada, like in the Temple of Doom.
So he eventually runs Sully off the road and then grabs him by his ankle and dangles him over a cliff edge, holding his ankle with a single hand because he's
that
strong.
Mulholland Drive.
And we get probably one of my favorite lines from the movie right here.
I took those. I'll take you where I'm supposed to meet him.
But you won't.
Why not?
Because I already know. Remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last?
That's right, Major. You did.
I lied.
Well, I said I was going to kill you last. I lied. Come on. And then on top of
it, doesn't matter what movie Schwarzenegger. All people want is just Schwarzenegger savagely killing people.
Yes,
like a Terminator.
That's all I want. That's all I want is him murdering people. He then, now that their car has been, Cindy's car has been wrecked, he then takes Sully's Porsche and just flips it back on its four wheels because he's that strong. He's like, I lift Porsches all the time. Come on. And they just drive off. And then Cindy asks this pertinent question.
What'd you do with Sully?
Let him go.
Damn it, I forgot.
I let him go. Come on.
Damn it.
So John and Cindy then head to a hotel that corresponds with a little hotel room key that they found in his pocket. They start searching the room for clues when all of a sudden Bill Duke's character, Cook, shows up out of nowhere.
You scared, motherfucker? Well, you should be, because this Green Beret's going to kick your big ass.
All right, it's Green Berets for breakfast. Right now, very hungry.
It's a bunch of bullshit.
So there's a giant fight scene between Bill Dukes and him. They burst in at one point into a room just with people having sex in it. There's titties in this scene. It's just, it's such a magic.
Fuck you, asshole.
Another Terminator line.
These guys ate too much red meat. Oh, he's good.
ultimately, it ends with Bill Dukes accidentally landing on a spike that had been broken off of, like, it's like a splintered piece of wood, and he gets impaled and kills him.
And amazingly, Schwarzenegger does not say, "Now you got the point, Bill."
Yeah, now you, why don't you stick around? But I gotta say that from the next movie when I impale somebody with a fucking knife. So, he ends up murdering Cook and impaling him on a piece of broken wood during the fight. They search his car and they find their next clue that takes them to an airport. Meanwhile, this dude has just left four open dead bodies, okay? We just have four dead people in the streets of Los Angeles and nobody cares. So, here's the next
big... And the couple went back to just having sex.
Here's the next unbelievable scene. This 6'2", gigantic, muscular man does an amazing job sneaking into an airport. Just like, oh, I have in my open shirt, and I just hide behind things. And he's able to infiltrate this fucking airport that's like scattered with guards. He knocks one guards out and then puts him in the closet, then brings Cindy in through the window. His daughter isn't there, but he finds a map showing coordinates to an island to the north. Armed with these new coordinates, John decides to go shopping and, utilizing a bulldozer, breaks into an army supply store, quickly grabs some vests and stuff, and knowing what he knows about army supply shops, he always knows there is a secret button within an army surplus store that, if you press it under the register, reveals the secret cache of guns similar to a Falling Down film or any other one. They're always gun nuts that live there, and back there is just an arsenal fucking akin to that of I don't know, like a right-wing guy that is ready for the world to end tomorrow. He picks up not only a bunch of machine guns and shit like that, but also a goddamn classic rocket launcher that has four rockets already loaded up in it. So he gets them loaded up, but as he's ready to leave, this happens.
What's that?
Rocket launcher.
I pulled up that audio of him grabbing the rocket launcher, but the cops show up, bust John, and stick him in the paddy wagon. Cindy watches helplessly from the car loaded with guns. So she follows John in the paddy wagon, and as the cops pull off from a stoplight, she pulls out a rocket launcher and shoots the back of it, toppling it over, like not worrying about killing the people within it at all, but not before shooting one the wrong direction first because she's a woman and doesn't know how rocket launchers shoot. God, what a dumb bitch. So she... Next, after she's freed John, they head to the marina where a plane is parked. They have a little trouble and a tiny shootout with some of the guards there, but they're able to take off and get into flight. But now the military is on their tail, where we have this cameo here.
You are flying over the San Miguel Gunnery Range. It's a highly restricted area. You must change course or you will be forced to land. Acknowledge.
Urgent. Repeat. Urgent.
Urgent.
You must contact General Franklin Kirby.
You must first change course or you risk being shot down. Acknowledge.
All right.
Did anybody tell you I have a small penis?
So, to all of our listeners, here's your question. Who was this random cameo voice you heard here? I'll give him a couple seconds to answer. I'm sure Joe Robinson already has this answer.
I'm going to say Selma Hayek.
It's Selma Hayek, and she is hot. And okay, Jeremy, who was that random cameo right there?
I think it was Pat Benatar.
Pat Benatar, yes. How did you know? Oh, God, once again.
Yes. You know, I can't get enough videos of Bill Paxton as a flight flight controller, whether he's German or English.
Yes, yes. So, no, it was actually Bill Paxton, famous from Big Love, the movie Twister. He's been killed by an alien, a predator, and a Terminator. Great actor. And star of Pat Benatar's fucking
Shadows of the Night
music video from the 80s, where he plays a Nazi.
And the full circle, which I messed up earlier, which Eric hopefully edited out, because I did.
You didn't blow it. You didn't blow it. I'm leaving it in.
Was the sixth degree of Paxton, which I really wanted to say, is of course, obviously Aliens, and also James Horner doing the soundtrack to it, which did this, and also you have the black guy from this, who's also in Predator, which is another thing about getting killed by a predator alien, and it's all a big ball of wax. Oh yeah.
The Arnold verse is very, very strong. So Cindy ultimately takes the plane very, very low to avoid radar. And it seems like it was barely an inconvenience. And they are very easily on their way to this this island. Now, meanwhile, Jennifer is trying to figure out a way to escape from her room by removing the door handle and try to break through the boarded up windows. Bennett and Arias then have a little chat.
Are you trying to frighten me? I don't have to try. When Matrix finishes the job, he'll be back for his daughter. Now, whether she's alive or dead, doesn't matter. Then he'll be after you. Now, the only thing between Matrix and you is me.
Can I say
I'm out? The only thing protecting you from the most deadly Terminator man who can bench press telephone booths over his head is this slightly overweight Australian man.
Can I say one of the worst accents in a movie? So, or just how slow he does it is pretty horrible.
It's not great. It's not great. So Cindy is able to land near the island shortly after the commercial flight is landing at the same time, which is like basically has that guy that he's killed on there. The time is up for John Matrix. He gets fully nude except for some tighty whities and then decides to paddle in. I don't know why that was necessary at all, but when he gets on there, he suits up with all these fucking guns and is basically a one-man army release.
I could really go for like a scene like this, but it goes like 10 minutes longer that he has so many weapons that he can barely move.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually kind of awkward because he's carrying so many machine guns and also this rocket launcher. He's like, he's doing farmer's carries like a quarter mile to get to this guy's house.
There's still a couple of bare inches where he can put another gun on himself.
So when he gets there, he starts knifing people left and right and then planting claymores all over the place. And then the machine gun firing starts and Arias orders Bennett to kill the girl. Bennett then goes to find that she has escaped and his schlubby ass has to go chase a 13-year-old girl, which is very, very difficult for him in this state. Arnold continues the rest of this scene where, keep in mind, before this, he lands on the island. We're at like a kill count of 6. He's gonna kill 100 more people in this this closing scene. The symphony of violence he unleashes. He rocket launchers cars, machine guns, scores of men. He eventually retreats to a garden shed where he starts getting a little fucking creative. The soldiers come in and he pitchforks one guy. Then he takes two axes, cuts two other guys down with the axes, then uses a machete to cut off a guy's arm. And then, my favorite, he takes fucking saw blades, circular saw blades, throws one into one guy's chest and chops the entire top of a guy's head off with a saw blade he throws like an ultimate frisbee.
Now, the only thing that's different about this is that he can't combine certain weapons like in Dead Rising to like make an electric saw blade with the also yes, shoots yes. And in a wheelchair. So,
oh god,
if he only came out in the mobile wheelchair with two M60s on each side. So,
so as he's doing all this, fat ass Bennett still can't catch this small girl. John makes his way to the house, cutting down more troops with a chain gun. Arius finally starts taking aim at John, and they have a bit of cat and mouse back and forth, but eventually he hits him with three fucking shotgun blasts to the chest, sending him through a giant window in the mansion, and there's no celebration as he continues to search for his daughter.
Doesn't even say any cool line when he kills the lead bad guy. Well, I guess Bennett is the lead bad guy.
Yeah, Bennett is the lead bad guy.
But more importantly, you didn't talk about the most important star of this film.
What's that?
That is known as the Steyr gun, the German gun that the bad guy uses. That
yeah?
is so freaking cool that they also had the lead German blonde bad guy in Die Hard using the same gun.
Ah, good point. Good like, point, Steyr, Jeremy.
Steyr is so freaking cool looking. I don't know if it's a great gun, but it's cool looking.
It is badass looking. I'll give you that. So, it's badass looking. So
fully plastic too.
So John Matrix then heads down to the boiler room where he finds where Bennett and his daughter are. Bennett ends up shooting him in the shoulder because he finds John's daughter first.
Come on, Bennett. Throw away that chicken shit gun. I just want to pull a trigger, put the knife in me, and look me in the eye. See what's going on in there.
Look on Bennett's face.
Oh, you know, I love when I really stab people. You know me so well, Matrix.
I like it. But John's ploy, it ends up working as we listen further.
Right? I'm kidding you, John. Come on, let the girl go. It's between you and me. Don't deprive yourself of some pleasure. Come on, Bennett. Let's party. I can beat you. I don't need the girl. I don't need the girl! I don't need the gun, John. I can beat you. I don't need no gun! I'm gonna kill you now!
I love his scream. It's such a girly scream. He literally sounds like John Edwards from back in the day. Remember when we're going to go to Washington? Like, that's his attack. That's his attack sound that he does. So good.
We're going to go to Washington. We're going to go to that. And we're going to kill Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Did you read the trivia on this one?
No. What was that?
It says Schwarzenegger, after having a knife fight with him, said, "Don't let him have a real knife again on set." Don't let him have one.
So the knife fight goes back and forth. They slam each other into furnaces filled with fire. He bumps him into a giant high voltage transformer, which barely seems like an inconvenience to Bennett. He just keeps fighting.
And this seems like this has turned into like a Nightmare on Elm Street fight.
Yeah, so. it's very cartoonish. I love it to death. Ultimately, John bests him in combat and Bennett pulls a gun on him. But Arnold rips a pipe off the fucking wall, like breaks steel, rips it off the wall, uses it like a javelin, and then pins him to the boiler, releasing massive amounts of steam through the pipe that is impaling him through his own chest. And then he lets off such a wonderful line right here.
Let off some steam, Bennett.
Let off some steam, Bennett. Come on. So he has saved the day. He looks up at his daughter, who is just enamored with everything. Now, Jeremy, you made a special song for some of Arnold's greatest lines between Let Off Some Steam, Bennett, and Screw You, Benny, which is another of your favorite lines. And here is this piece of art that Jeremy Woodworth has made for the show tonight.
Let off some steam, Bennett. Screw you, Benny. Let off some steam, Bennett. Screw you, Benny. Let off some steam, Bennett. Screw you, Benny. See you around. With a giant drill.
All right, Jeremy, look at you.
It's not my best work.
So John is reunited with his daughter, who's just so happy to see all this carnage and murder laid out before her eyes. The U.S. Cavalry arrives late to the show and to pick up John. General Kirby asks him if there's anything left, and he goes, just bodies. And Kirby begs him to come back to the force, but he says, this is the last time. Until next time.
Or is it? To be continued.
And that brings us to an end of fucking Commando, which I found, this is the song that's called Fight for Love at the end that plays, but I also found this better version. So there's a version on YouTube, if you search the movie Commando, which is so funny, and I feel like I just have to play it now. They uploaded it so it wouldn't get taken down at like double speed, so you can hear the song played like the Alvin and the Chipmunks would play it, and it's
no chance.
I kind of like it better this way, Jeremy. That brings us to an end of Commando. We did it, boys. Merle Rogers, I hope you enjoyed the episode overall.
Yeah. He was hot.
Fight for love!
The plane is going off!
Great film, Jeremy. Another episode in the bag. Anything you'd like to add?
No, just kind of miss Bill Paxton a lot. So.
It just made me sad to think of Bill Paxton more than anything. You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. That's Eric with a K, comedy with a C. By the way, I got a comedy special coming out in December, boys. It's going to be a very cheap price tag for you to watch it. It's going to be a buck or two. So get ready to check that out. Do yourself a Christmas favor and check it out. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month. It's hosted by Michael Quinlan and Kimberly Callahan. Check that shit out. I got a bunch of shit going on this month with the murder mystery, so dielaughingproductions.com if you want to see me get half naked on stage and do that shit. Jeremy, take us out.
If Bennett bleeds, we can kill him.
Henriquez, my friend's dead tired. Remember, Sully, when I told you I'd kill you last, I lied. And Cook, you sure did get the point. Oh, yes, you did. In your chest. Arius, you are such a bad guy. Did you enjoy the view through that window? Yeah. And Bennett, let off some steam.